Alton Brown on the Alton Browncast, coming to you from my dreary little trailer on the Sony Culver Studios outside the set for Iron Chef Gauntlet, which I don't even know if I'm supposed to be talking about. Doesn't matter. We're here with a guest this week that I've been wanting to get on the show for a while, Duff Goldman. Duff, of course, most of you know as the Ace of Cakes. And hi, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Do you remember making your first cake?
Well, I mean, it's weird because, like, you know, it's like, what was your first cake? And it's like, well,
I mean, I'm sure you've been asked this before.
But it's like the answer, I think, changes a few times as my memory gets better or worse, as the case may be. I think probably like my first cake in culinary school, and that was like the first time anyone sat me down. I was like, here's how you make a cake. I do remember it. And it was actually really cool. It was like this, it was three tiers, and it was on this like really cool kind of chrome separator. And when I first started learning about cakes, the very first time, I was like fascinated by, there's a cake decorating tradition in South Africa, Australia, and New Zealand, where they do this amazing string work with royal icing, the stuff you make.
What's it called? What's that tradition called?
It's just Australian string work, I think, okay, is what they call it. And it's like you're like suspending these like incredibly fragile, just like gossamer lines of royal icing over the cake. And so I saw that, and I come from an art background, and I was like, huh, I bet that could be really cool. And I made something really abstract, really kind of insane. And it was funny because, like, in culinary school, I was like the bread bacon redneck of the class. I mean, it was like 15 people. There were two guys, me and this other dude. And, like, all, you know, the girls, they all wanted to make cakes. I was super excited about the cakes. And I was a bread guy. You know, that was kind of my background. It's what I did. And I was a bread baker after school. And so, like, you know, I was the one carrying around the big sacks of flour and stuff. And so when I made this cake that was, like, just really, you know, elegant, very delicate, beautiful cake, everybody was like, you? Really? And I was like, yeah, you know. But I didn't want it. Like, cakes wasn't my thing. It wasn't kind of what I was like... I didn't want to be a cake decorator. You know, I wanted to be a pastry chef on the line in New York, you know, wow, like banging pans, doing it. And, you know, my teacher's like, you know, you should think about doing cakes for a career. You're really good at that. And I was like, no way. But here I am.
So how did it happen? I mean, then what convinced you that was the way that you needed to go?
Well, you know how, like, if you're good at something, that behavior will get reinforced, right? Especially in a kitchen. If you're good at something, I mean, it's just like, you're going to get that job. And I was, you know, every restaurant I ever worked at, you know, after culinary school, everywhere I worked in hotels, restaurants, I mean, you name it. There would be there'd be an emergency. Oh my God, you know, we got this birthday. We need a cake. Who can make a cake? And I'm like, I can make a cake. And so I'd make the cake. And then it was like, sweet, you're the cake guy. And so whenever there was a cake now, you had to do it. And so I just kept getting better and better at them. And then I had a job. My last job before opening my own bakery, I was a personal chef for family. And they had four kids. They were very social, had lots of friends with kids. And I never made a cake for them. They always went and bought their cakes. And then one time there was an emergency and they were like, do you know how to make a cake? And I was like, yeah, I can probably make a cake. And, you know, I mean, I made a nice cake for them. And they were like, whoa, you know, because I made this, you know, really cool cake. And then it was every birthday, every kid's birthday, everybody that worked.
You became the cake guy.
I was the cake guy. I was making so many cakes. And I was just like, I should just open up my own place. So I did.
And that was that.
That was that.
And that place is still open.
That place is still open. We turned 15 in March, March 3rd.
How does that feel? Having a bakery that's 15 years old.
I mean, I don't feel that old. So, I, you know, it's weird.
But you, like, never do. Till you die. That's, yeah, what it's all
about. I mean, it's really strange because it's like, you know, you think about 15 years, a long time, you know, like when I think about, you know, like when I graduated high school or when I graduated college, or, you know, you think about sort of these big milestones in your life, and you're like, man, 15 years, that's a long time. Like, it doesn't seem like I've been doing this for that long, but, you know, numbers don't lie. It's amazing. It feels really good. I mean,
do you ever just go back and go into your own shop and just make cake?
Yeah, I still do. You know,
because a lot of people, when they've got this level of success, get very separated from the craft that got them where they are.
Yeah. And I think that's a choice. You know, I really think it is. And I mean, sometimes, like, you know, you have to do stuff. I mean, obviously I'm not decorating cakes every day, but I force myself, and not really force myself because it sounds like I don't want to do it, but I make sure to make the time in my schedule to be in my shop and do stuff and have my hands on cakes. Because if I didn't, I don't know, it'd be a little disingenuous to talk about cakes and just be the cake guy when you never do it.
Well, I think there are people that would justify it as, you know, you paid your dues and now you're the front man. I think there are people that would say, you know, if you're the lead singer, you don't have to play guitar anymore. I mean, right, there are people who would say that, right?
Well, I mean, I think, like, you know, Bill Gates doesn't have to write code anymore. You know,
no.
Like, you know,
that's, he might, for fun. We don't know.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, I could see it. But, and I, which is a good point, because, you know, if Bill Gates is writing code for fun, you know, that means he still loves it. And the thing is, I still love it. You still love to cook. Every, you know, every chef that we know, even though we're in front of the camera, you know,
are doing it, still doing it, because we're driven to.
We have to. You have to. If you weren't creating, actually using your hands and making stuff, you go crazy.
What was the art that you did before you became a baker? Before you became a bread baker?
Well, I was. You know, my great grandmother was a baker and a weaver and a milliner. She made ladies' hats, like, back in the 30s.
Wow.
Yeah, really cool stuff.
In America or
yeah,
in Europe?
So she came from Russia when she was like 15 or so, and she opened up a hat shop in Wichita, Kansas. It's pretty cool. And she
I love this, Wichita, by the way.
And Wichita's awesome.
Wichita's a very cool town.
There's a crazy soda fountain, I'll tell you about it. It's really, really great.
I think we know about that one.
Oh, really? Yeah. Tin ceiling and everything?
Yeah. It's right on, it's by near the train tracks there.
Yeah,
I can't
remember
the name of the street.
Have you been to Wichita during the Monarch Festival?
No.
The monarchs are migrating from Canada to Mexico. I mean, it is billions of monarchs. It's just amazing. It's amazing. Anyways, so that was my great-grandmother. She was a milliner, baker. Mm-hmm. My grandmother was a silversmith, an enamelsmith, which is a very arcane branch of art, a photographer, and she did charcoals. My mom, way back in the day, was a painter and did charcoals, and then she switched to pottery. She actually owned a pottery studio in Venice Beach in the 60s.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
The totally. Stuff she saw.
Yeah, yeah.
The stuff she smoked.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and she like, swears she never did. I'm like, Mom, you owned a pottery studio?
Okay. Yeah, no, yeah, and then, yeah, yeah.
And then, but then she switched to stained glass, and now she does stained glass and mosaics, and she's incredible. I mean,
so this comes down to the women,
yes,
the family,
yeah, all, you okay. know. But I got no sisters, so I got it. And got then, it. So you know, we're very artistic, we're very creative. Everybody just, you know, we do stuff. We're very kind of hands on.
You're makers.
We're makers. Yeah, exactly. And then, so everybody's kind of waiting to sort of see, like, you know, like what my art was going to be, because, you know, our whole family, it's just kind of one of those things, you kind of wait for it to sort of blossom. And so everybody's like, you know, what's Duff going to do? What's his art going to be? And I would, like, you know, I was trying different things when I was younger. And then when I was like 13 or so, you know, I was really into old school hip hop, like, you know, old school rap. And my art came out. I became a graffiti artist. And but it was a good one. Like, I didn't tag. I wasn't a vandal. I mean,
almost by definition.
Yes. I mean, technically, yes, I was a vandal. But I wasn't like making things ugly, just tagging stuff and just, you know, spray painting, whatever. You know, we did big, bright murals, like really colorful stuff. And we thought we made the trains look better. That was my opinion. And so that's, you know, I was a graffiti artist. And so I kind of hit it, like nobody really knew. And then one time my mom went down into my room, opened my closet, and there was like literally 20 of those plastic milk crates full of spray paint. And she was like, okay, well, that's alarming. And so she got home and she's like, what's all this? And I put her in the car. We drove up to Boston to where the train yards were. And even as when you're a graffiti writer, you know which trains your pieces are going to be on because you know where they're going to go in the city. And so I knew where my trains were. And so I took my mom to the platform where that train was going to come out. And so we were waiting and waiting and waiting. I mean, we had a few pieces around, and train pulls into the station, and my mom's sitting there like looking at this, you know, really, you know, well done mural on the side of this train. And she's just like, God, she's like, I should be so mad at you right now, but I can't. It's just too good. And so she was implicit in my, you know, like she was cool about it, you know, because I mean, she's an artist, you know, and she was just like, you know, that's what you got to do. But then I got arrested and she wasn't as cool about it. And so it was actually good. My mom and my art teacher at school and my parole officer, funnily enough, kind of all got together, and they were like, listen, you know, you got talent, you're a good artist, you know, you're good at this stuff, but there's no future here. You know, the only future you have in graffiti is, you know, jail. you know, or worse. I mean, it wasn't exactly safe. And so my art teacher, we went through all kinds of stuff to try to see what was going to grab my attention. I was painting, I was drawing, and it's just, I don't know, I'm not very good at rendering, you know, as far as like, you know, sitting there drawing like a beautiful picture of something. My teacher was this crazy dude. He was actually an understudy of Willem de Kooning.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. He was a neat guy. His name was Jeffrey Mieslick. And Mieslick, he worked in bronze. He did a lot of different metal stuff, but really worked in bronze. And like he would do crazy stuff. Like he found a dead bird on the way to school, and he's like, "Hey, stay after class. We're going to bronze this thing." And so he like bronze this dead bird, and then he'd build this crazy structure around it, and just really like wild stuff. And I found that the process of working in metal was like the same, but it had that level of excitement and that level of danger and that sort of, there was some unpredictability about it that I really missed from graffiti. Because, you know, when you're painting a picture, you're not going to get chased. You're not, nothing bad's going to happen to you. You might get some paint in your eye. It's going to be the worst pain that you have. But, you know, when you're working with this metal, I mean, things are splashing and you've got protective gear on, and it like felt like a...
It was visceral.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it just involved a lot more than sort of your brain and your hand. Like, it involved everything. It was a physical thing. And so I really took to metal sculpture, and so that's what I got into. I was bronzing and welding and brazing and, you know, making stuff. It was cool.
Well, that's an easy jump then to cake decorating, quite frankly. It's visceral.
Yeah.
It requires an understanding of materials and
absolutely
techniques,
yeah,
patience, mm-hmm, steady hand, steady
yeah
eye.
Yeah, you know, just a sensitivity to temperature, mm-hmm, you know, sensitivity to your medium as far as like, you know, for example, you're not going to join, say, lead with steel. Right.
It would be difficult.
It would be difficult. It just wouldn't work. You know, same thing. You're not going to join, you know, hard gum paste with water. You're going to melt it. You know, so just sort of like, you know, understanding those sort of things definitely helped. And also the kinds of cakes that we make. You know, we make, you know, crazy engineered architectural things.
Sure.
And
mechanical, moving pieces.
Yes, yes. There's lights, there's motors. Yeah, yeah, there's some engineering there. But knowing how to put one of those things together, same thing. I mean, like a metal sculpture, you know, there's the art of it, and it's thinking about this design and just how it's going to relate to its space and, you know, what's underneath it, what's above it, what's around it. But also, how is it going to hold, like, how is it going to react to gravity? How is it going to react to physics, you know, to momentum and, you know, things mm-hmm like that. And so same thing with cakes, you know, you got to think about like, well, how, like, you know, we want to build this crazy cake, right? But, you know, I say I wanted to make a cake of a guy throwing a javelin, right? We got his arm back, and, you know, that's a big unsupported structure there. I can't do that at a cake, so I got to build something inside the cake that's going to hold that together. Those kinds of skills you learn from, you know, welding and seeing what's going to stand up straight and it's going to balance. Is it going to work?
The difference from sculpture, though, is that in the end with a cake, somebody's going to cut into it and eat the thing.
Yeah. And you run into some tricky...
Somebody's going to eat the cake, and they're going to expect it to be good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that, I tell you...
And people forget that. I mean, in this yeah day and age with all the cake, I mean, let's face it, you were kind of on the cutting edge of an entire cake construction sculpture
yeah
movement.
Yeah.
And yet, the cake should taste good.
Yeah.
How do you maintain that, especially in people that come up under you that want to learn what you do, mm-hmm, that in the end, it is going to be a slice of cake on a plate, is mm-hmm it not?
And I preach that all the time. And I think that, I mean, one, I wouldn't still be open. You know, that 15
no,
years
15
would be
coming years, up. 15 yeah years would not happen.
Yeah, our cakes are good. And, you know, it's weird because I was a pastry chef before I was a cake decorator. You know, I mean, I was, you know, I've worked in some pretty cool places, and, you know, I've had the opportunity to learn from some incredible chefs, and I couldn't make a bad cake. Not, I mean, I could, I'm capable of it, but you know,
it's not something you're willing to do.
Yes. I can't let myself, you know, like make something bad. So it's like, look, cake is not the structural medium of cake.
No.
Other things are.
Because it's too tender.
It's way too tender. So it doesn't matter. You can make a good cake. You can make a bad cake. You can build a sculpture, and it can be beautiful out of both those things. Take the extra time, make the good cake, and that way, because it is a cake, and it will get chopped up, and is impermanent. Those things, you know, the cakes that we make, they're not meant to last more than a couple days. Make it good. Make it worth cutting into. If you're going to make this beautiful thing and then it doesn't taste good inside, then somebody cuts it open and they eat it. And they're like, why did I even cut that? I'd rather just sit here and look at it because it tasted like garbage.
the cakes that you guys make, since most of them are expected to be both structurally structural materials, building materials,
yes,
delicious,
yep,
which they have to be, or else people will say dust cakes are no damn good, and right, then you're out of business. You don't want that.
No.
And I imagine that in this day and age, people are expecting a certain amount of exoticism in flavorings. Or do people just say, yeah, I still just want lemon cake, or I still just want, what are people asking for?
You know, they're asking for everything. And I think there are a lot of things that people do want some really cool flavors. And so we have those flavors on the menu. We have a curry banana that's amazing. It's really good.
The actual cake, not frosting, but the cake itself.
The actual cake, curry banana. We have one of our most popular is a pumpkin chocolate chip. That's really just, it's, you know, when you take anything kind of starchy, like a pumpkin or a potato, and you put it in a cake, just super moist. Oh, man, it's great. But I think carrot cake is probably the most popular. Like, so when we do a wedding cake, it's like 6, 7, 8 tiers. We'll do different flavors in every tier because people want to get a whole bunch of stuff. It's fun. And,
variety. You
know, pick them out. Yeah. Every single wedding cake, I would say at least 80% of the wedding cakes we make, one of the layers is carrot cake. People love carrot cake. You know, it's
I love carrot cake.
Carrot cake's a good carrot cake is fantastic. Now, let me ask you a question. Nuts, raisins?
Nuts.
Nuts in a carrot cake?
Not raisins. No, okay. I'll do nuts, but I don't think they have to be there.
Okay.
But I like them, especially if it's a more rustic form of carrot cake that's got bigger chunks of carrot in it.
Sure.
Because, you know, there are levels of refinement
with
that kind of thing. But I'll take some walnuts.
Okay.
In my carrot cake. What about you? Raisins? What do you?
Nothing. I like carrot cake, cream cheese frosting. That's it.
It's fine by me. and if I was going to make one as a celebration cake, I wouldn't put nuts in it, I don't think. I think people are expecting smooth and, you know, cuttable, and they don't want to run into the nuts and whatnot. Although taking the nuts and grinding them very fine and making like a crumb coat before the icing of the nuts, I think is a way to get nut flavor in there without having chunks.
Never thought about that.
Yeah, I'm not telling you about cake, man. I am not telling you about cake. It's just that I'm a huge cake fan, and I grew up on carrot cake. I grew up on coconut cake, which is like an archetype all to itself to me, and German chocolate cake, which has also become very, very hard to find.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think German chocolate is one of those. It's kind of old school, and if you don't do it right, it is dry. You know, and people, it's one of those things where I think that they kind of went like Red Delicious apples. Like, remember when we were kids, Red Delicious apples, actually, they weren't that bad. They were crunchy.
But we also, when we were kids, we hadn't had that many apples.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know how much of it is the apples got crappier or we got wiser.
I think they got crappier. You know, I really do.
Too, because last time I had one, I literally couldn't eat it.
Oh, it's mush. It's just mealy. Yeah, that's the way it's just mealy. And so I think that German chocolate cake kind of went the way of Red Delicious, where, I mean, not to sort of be like, oh, kids these days, but,
it's okay. You can say kids these days. It's all right. You've earned it. You and I both can say that.
Okay.
It's probably fine.
But it's like, you know, there's definitely a loss of craft, I think, that we've sort of seen. And I think, you know, one of those things is German chocolate cake is, it's old school, you know, and it's like, until German chocolate cake has like the red velvet renaissance that Red Velvet did, it's going to be harder and harder to find a good one. You can find something called German chocolate cake.
Sure you can.
You know,
people will define it by the frosting alone.
Yeah, yeah.
Why is it so hard to make a decent red velvet cake while we're on the subject? Because I know that when I did red velvet cake for Good Eats, it tortured me for 6 months because I tried to build one out of devil's food, because historically devil's food had been ground zero for that. But I never really felt like that's red velvet. What did I miss?
I got to tell you, and I'm a little embarrassed, but I don't know, because when I make a red velvet cake, I make chocolate cake, I put red food coloring in it, and I put cream cheese frosting on it.
And that's it. Boom.
That's it. That's my red velvet.
I tried to do the whole beets thing.
Yeah, it gets brown. It gets weird.
Brown. And, and I try it with, you know, natural cocoa, because that's more red than Dutch process.
Right.
Trying to mess around with acidity this and acidity that. And in the end, it was just like, screw it. Give me the number 10 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And make a really rich chocolate cake and dose it up.
That's it. Maybe soak it. You know, because any chocolate cake tends to be drier, I find, than
because
other
of the
cakes.
Cocoa solids.
Yeah, because the cocoa sucks up that moisture. You know, it's just like, you know, when you put cocoa in your mouth, it's like, sucked all the moisture out. So I think, you know, with chocolate cakes, you know, that same thing, you know, when you're using cocoa powder, like, you're going to get that sort of drier thing. So it's good to soak those things a little bit.
Do you think that part of the reason, and this is something that worries me about all of us that are now on television, cake making as a craft, was something that used to be passed on generationally, right? I mean, typically, at least in my family, it was typically a mother-daughter trade-off. Yeah. Do you think that one of our issues is that it's just really hard to teach the craft of cake making on television or on a written recipe, that it requires too much feedback, you know, too much look at the batter, feel the batter, look at the temperature, you know, that interchange between teacher and student?
I think all baking is difficult to get across in a, either the written word or on television.
Because it's too tactile?
It's too tactile, and it's also, it's every time. Listen, you know, like if you took the same brand of flour that was milled at the same time of year and the same salt and the same water at the same temperature and in the same oven in your same kitchen with the same mixer and you mix it exactly the same time, you do it from you know, you do it January 1st and you do it February 1st, you're going to have two different doughs, right? And that's just, the air pressure is going to be different. The moisture in the air is going to be different. There are things that you just,
the flour cannot. Could be different because it changes. It's an agricultural product. And even though they try to standardize them, they can't.
No, you can't. I mean, it's, you know, red winter wheat is much different than summer wheat.
And summer wheat.
And so, you know, I think that when you're standing in a kitchen with somebody and you're looking at a dough mixing, you're constantly evaluating it. Every few seconds you're looking at it. Is it doing what I think it's supposed to be doing? And so, you know, with a cake, with my great-grandmother's strudel, which was amazing. She made her own phyllo dough, which I've done once in my life. I'll never do it again because
it's horrible.
I hate it.
It's the worst. That's what cheaters are for.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It's the worst. You know, I think you need somebody standing there showing you how to do this stuff and explaining as you're evaluating, you know, literally second by second what it is you're doing. You just can't really get that across on TV. And we try, you know. I mean, the way that we talk about baking, I've seen you talk about baking, the way I talk about baking, you really try to like say, okay, well, most of the time it's like this, but, and you try to give everybody the information of, if it's raining outside, you might get this. If you're up in the mountains, you're going to get this. If you're, you know, in the desert, you're going to get this. And if you're in Florida in July, you're going to get something else.
When's the last time you just taught young bakers coming up? Is that something you're still actively involved in?
I try to do as many demos as possible. You know, I try to, you know, because I feel like I could teach in a room, but when I do a demo, it's, you know, I'm reaching hundreds of people.
Sure.
And, you know, I do as much as I can. I don't get to do it nearly as much as I want to.
I just wondered if you had noticed a change in, you know, when young people come up wanting to come into your kitchen, you know, 20 years ago, they would have come with a very different mental, you know, a different mindset than they would today. And not because you're famous, but simply because the attitudes within the industry are different.
Yeah.
I certainly know that at least half of the young cooks that come to me really just want to be famous.
Yeah.
What they want to be is Next Food Network star. They don't want to learn a craft, so to speak. And I just wondered if you see more of that in your industry, and if that makes it harder to get good people and makes it harder to pass on the knowledge that you've acquired the hard way.
It does. It makes it very difficult, and you do see it. You know, it's funny because I talk to like my friends in restaurants all the time, and you know, whenever I'm like in somebody's kitchen, I was just in at Volt in Frederick with Brian Voltaggio, and we were filming a thing for, I forget what it was, but we were filming something together. It was like a Maryland crab feast, and it was during service, and all the cooks are in there, and everybody's doing their thing, and we're filming, and then there's times when we're not filming, and we're just kind of hanging out, and I was like, God, you know, I miss this. You know, I really miss restaurants. And so, you know, I said to Brian, I was like, man, you know, I really miss being in a restaurant. And he's like, no, you don't. And I was like, no, I really do. He's like, no, you don't. Trust me. He's like, it's a different industry. Like, when I was coming up, I worked in a kitchen where I had to get a certain amount of gougères onto a quarter sheet pan. Had to be the exact number of gougères. And if I got one wrong, I would have to put my hand on the marble and the chef would bring a carpaccio mallet and smash me in the hand with it. Right. I'm not advocating for that kind of behavior. That's terrible. But at the same time, it made me really good at those gougères. Nobody did it better
than you realize that it's totally, totally, totally wrong.
Completely wrong. It's terrible. But it made me really good at it. And I'm not saying that people should be violent. I don't think that there's no place for violence or, you know, physical. But the industry has changed to a point where that, like, just even being critical has become really, really difficult for people to kind of handle. I had an intern. She was 20. This was about a year ago. And she, I don't know what she was doing, but she wasn't, she did not belong in a kitchen. You know, and it was obvious she was a nice girl. She was cool. And so, you know, instead of being sort of chefed off and just yelling and being like, get out, you know, I sat her down and I was like, listen, you know, what do you want to do? Like, what, you know, where do you see yourself going? What do you want to do in this industry? Like, does cakes, do cakes excite you? Is there another kind of cooking that you might want to try out? You know, maybe you could go there. But I was trying to help her kind of like think critically about her own career and her own path and where she was going. You know, she's like, okay, you know, I'm going to think about it. I'll go home. And so she went home, and the next day I was at the bakery and the phone rings and my, the girl answered the phone. She's like, hey, it's for you. So I pick it up. It's this girl's dad. And he was just like, hey, you know, I was talking to my daughter last night and she, told me that you were pretty hard on her. And, you know, I just wanted to know what was going on. And I was just like, like, just because you're concerned? And he's like, no, well, you know, I mean, she called me and, you know, she was pretty upset. And so I don't know if you and I needed to have a conversation. And I was just like, why are you calling me? He's like, well, you know, my daughter was, you know, and I was just like, your daughter's 20 years old. She's an adult. And like, he couldn't get that. His daughter definitely couldn't get that. Like, couldn't understand that. Like, we're 20 years old. Don't call your dad and tell your dad to call your boss.
I would be shocked, except that I've heard this story from other people in other walks of life.
Yeah.
And I'm always, do you have any idea how inappropriate that is?
It's pretty
and how bad. Counterproductive that is? Because you were telling her something she needed to hear.
Yeah. Her dad wasn't. And so she came in and I fired her. And I was just like, I don't have time for this. I mean, it's like, you know,
sicked your dad on me.
Yeah. It's like, come on, you know, and that's the thing. If he was like concerned, like, hey, listen, let's have a conversation because I'm concerned too. And I think that you're right. Or I think, you know, we need to, you know, could you give
help me
some advice,
yeah,
you know,
me.
Something like that? Absolutely, man. I'd love to talk to that guy. That's not, he was
that was not
for.
The guy.
No, he was calling me to be like, I'm the dad. And if you need me to come down there and talk to you, and I'm like,
you know what?
Yeah.
I really just don't. I really don't need to talk to you. Yeah. And your daughter doesn't need you to come talk to
me. No. You know, she's got it. She's got, it's a tough industry. I mean, cooking is a tough industry. And, I mean, God, one of my first jobs, I worked there for 7 months for free just so I could get on the schedule and get paid.
Look, yeah. Anybody that's worked a line, I'm sorry. You know, they would for a nighttime service, they would schedule me on at 4. I'd get there, I mean, at 4:30. I'd get there at 2.
Yeah.
And
you don't clock in until 4:30.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, you're working for free to not be killed.
Exactly.
Because it's like going to war every night, right?
Yeah.
And I who knows how many free hours. I have no idea how many free hours
I work. But it's what you do. It's because you wanted to be a chef and you wanted to be in that kitchen. You wanted to be surrounded by those people and you wanted to have that energy and that excitement, that everything that was happening in that kitchen.
Sure.
You listen, Friday night, 9 o'clock, you are on fire. Right, yep. It was the best time of your life, and so and that's why you're there. And I that's missing a little bit. And you know, I think part of that is our fault. You know, we're sort of there, but we're also at every chance. I'm sure when you talk to culinary students, when I talk to culinary students, first thing I say is, if you're here because you want to be on Food Network, don't be here. It's just not. Do not go to culinary school and spend your money because you think you're going to be on Food Network. I didn't want to be on Food Network. I was trying to be a chef.
Well, then how exactly did that happen?
I don't know.
Well, let's try to work it out. I don't know. I don't know the history of that. Did somebody just call you up one day and say, hey, you make great cakes. You want to make those on TV?
Okay. This is a funny story. So
I want to hear this story.
Okay. I'd started my bakery. I was in my apartment in Baltimore on the third floor of this walk-up apartment. And, you know, it was tiny. I was like, had I built a website myself. I went to Kinko's and we cut out the business cards myself. And I'm baking my little oven and I didn't have a refrigerator. So the eggs stayed on the counter. Don't tell anybody.
Hey, European style.
Yeah.
Now you can call them European style cakes.
Exactly. And so, you know, and I was like, you know, I was doing good and I was, you know, making my cakes and it was just me at the time. And so when I first built the website, I didn't have a portfolio of, like, you know, this is before digital cameras, so I didn't have any pictures. So I went to all these other websites and found awesome pictures and stole them. Plagiarism. And then I put them on my website and was like, here's a portfolio of a bunch of cakes. And so then what I did was, every time somebody would order that cake, I would then take a picture of the one I made and then switch it out, right? So it was slowly getting legit. It's something that cake decorators just do. People have done it to me thousands of times. It's totally cool. You know, sorry for all the comments you're gonna get about that. So anyway,
no, I was just thinking about how that's come full circle. We won't get into that.
So there was a
because you weren't saying this is my cake. You're saying I can make this cake. That's two different things.
I didn't say anything.
Well, exactly.
I just had a photograph.
This is
of
a cake.
Here's a cake.
Here's a cake. Here's right? a picture of a cake.
Right.
A picture you get of more cake. In trouble now for the rights to the photograph than you would the cake.
Absolutely.
You can't copyright the cake
because cake decorators are cool and photographers are not.
No, photographers are generally extraordinarily possessive right, about. Right. Photographs, but they have to be.
So there's a cake decorator in New York. You probably know Colette Peters.
I know who that is. Okay, I have never met Colette.
Colette, back in the day, she was the absolute be-all end. She is amazing. She wrote all the books. She had all the new techniques. She's just everybody who decorates cakes now owes her a huge debt. She's just amazing. I had one of her cakes on there. So, you know, I'm doing my business. Everything's going fine. And one day there was a phone call. I got a phone call and it was a 917. It's a New York number. And so I picked up my hello. And Colette's real funny. She's got her accent's like half Brooklyn, half Minnesota. It's really strange.
But yes. I didn't know those two things could exist in the same mouth.
They do. And it's amazing. And so I pick up the phone. I'm like, hello. And she's like, is Duff Goldman there? You know, and I was just like, yeah.
Can I give him a message?
Yeah. And she's like, this is Colette Peters. And I was like,
I'm screwed.
Right.
I'm screwed.
And she's like, she said, I'm judging a cake competition in Beaver Creek, Colorado. And I think you should do it. And I was like, okay, I'd love to, you know. And then so I gave her my email address.
Oh my God, was she baiting you?
No. And so I was just like, yeah, I'd love to. And it was for Bon Appetit. It wasn't televised. And she's like, yeah, you get, you know, all expense paid trip. And I used to live in Vail, which was great. So I was just like, oh, they're great. I'm going to get to go decorate cakes. I can go snowboarding. It's going to be awesome. So, and I was like 24 at the time. I mean, you know, I was young.
You're a kid.
I was a kid. And so, no, it's like 26. 26-ish.
Still a kid. Sorry.
I was just doing the math. So, you know, she tells me all this information. And I was like, listen, Cole, I got to tell you, I'm a huge fan. And she's like, yeah, I can tell by your website. Now, she said that, right? And it was like, ooh, ow. But she was really cool about it, you know? And she was just like, she's used to it. And I was a young guy. And she's like, listen. And, you know, from then on, we became huge friends.
And so, you probably replaced that photo pretty quickly.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Quickly. So I went to Colorado, and the theme of the competition was nature, right? Which, you know, is a pretty generic theme. And so I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, got a bunch of cake decorators. I never competed before in cakes. I've competed in ice and I've competed in other stuff, but I've never competed in cakes. And so I was like, all right, you get a bunch of pastry chefs and you're going to tell them the theme is nature, right? So we're probably going to get like a cake of the seasons. You're probably going to get a couple of cakes that are just covered in flowers, you know, things like that. And I was like, okay, that's all like falls into
perfectly,
the
realm. Perfectly valid.
Legit, but generic. And so I was like, I'm going to do something amazing. So I got a bunch of rolled steel, right? And I made this amazing, well, I put all these pieces together and I basically made a giant like brutalist peach tree or just a tree out of this rolled steel. And, you know, and I brought everything to Colorado with me and we, you know, we're sitting up on stage and the rules at a real competition like this are very different than what you find on television. You're still like neatness definitely counts. You know, you got to be organized. You got to be clean. You're not allowed to leave your station for 8 hours. Like you are not allowed to leave your station. I think you can go and use the bathroom. That's it. But you can't like, you know, walk around the table. You can't do anything like that. So, you know, I get there and there's like, I mean, serious pastry chefs are at this thing. And, you know, I'm probably less than half the age of anybody else. The other thing was everybody brought an assistant. I didn't know I could bring an assistant. So I was by myself.
So you're by yourself.
On the stage with, you know, some Richard Ruskell was there. His incredible pastry chef. Some really like, I mean, these guys were awesome. And so, you know, I'm like bringing out all my stuff and I'm like stacking up all these, you know, giant, you know, sort of tubes of steel. And, I pull out an arc welder and put it on my table because I got to build this thing. And, you know, everybody's like looking at me like, what are you going to do with that? I was just like, oh, you know, something. And then I made this crazy tree, and then all the cakes were giant peaches, like this big, and they were styrofoam.
This big, by the way, is about the size of a cantaloupe.
Yeah, nice and big. So I did like the bottom third of it was styrofoam, carved that out, then carved the cakes on top. Then I took these huge stainless steel screw eyes, about like 10 inches long. Shoved them through the peaches.
Down and through the styrofoam.
Through the styrofoam. Put a fender washer, which is a really
big washer.
Bolted them on. Covered everything. And then I hung them from fishing line from the branches. Oh, sorry.
That's good.
I hung the peaches from fishing line from the branches of the tree. Right? So they're all kind of out there floating. They made all these crazy vines crawling all over the tree. It was awesome. This thing was awesome. And I'm like welding and a big welding mask on stage. And like everyone's over there like, you know, piping roses. They're like looking at me like, this dude's nuts. And so at one point I actually set the table on fire. And like, I mean, a little fire, but, you know, put it out. And, you know, I was building that. It got so massive so fast. And so I had to leave my station and walking around. There was so much cornstarch on the floor that had all these footprints all over this like
beautiful stage. What was the cornstarch for?
Cornstarch is keeps fondant from sticking to stuff.
Of course,
right? So you can use powdered sugar too, but I use cornstarch.
Yeah, but powdered sugar gets moist in its own.
Yeah, and it's kind of gritty. Yeah. And yeah, yeah. So my station was a mess. The table was on fire. But I made an amazing cake, and so I came in dead last. No. I came in second to last. The lady who came in last screamed at her assistant so bad that the assistant cried, and she got disqualified. So it's just good. So I came in second to last. And, you know, it was funny because, like, Colette came up to me after the thing and she's like, listen, you made an awesome cake. This thing it's astounding, but you broke every single rule. You can't win. I'm like, dude, it's fine. I got a free trip to Colorado. This is great. And then I didn't know, but Colette was competing on all the Food Network competitions, the Food Network Challenge. Remember those
back then? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, those were, love those shows. And so she went back to Food Network and she's like, hey, you know, I met some pretty cool pastry chefs this weekend. There's like, you know, photos of this guy's work, this guy. Now there's this other guy. He's pretty good, but he's insane. And they were like, okay, let's get him on, you know, get him on Challenge. And so they invited me to come and compete in Sea Island, Georgia. It was an awesome, and it was the, I remember it was the spooky Halloween cakes and candy competition, right? And so, we were making the cake we made was really cool. It was like a big haunted house and had all these like ghosts and stuff. And we put a fog machine in there and it was like, ooh, it was cool. But the candy I made, like everybody made either gummies or lollipops. And I made Butterfingers. Like, you know, rolled out the sugar and put the nuts and did the, you know, it was like, it's basically you're making laminated dough with hot sugar and nuts, right? So I made Butterfingers from scratch and everybody was like, whoa. That's insane, right? And I was dipping them, and I did like the when the chocolate sets up a little bit, and you put the fork in and lift it over, and you get the little curls. Yeah. So I made these Butterfingers. I was like, I knew that was gonna like help us out, and it was cool. But the funny thing was, so we're down in, you know, we're Sea Island, Georgia. It's great down there, right? It's me and my sous chef Jeff, and so. We get there, and the cameras were they were starting to evolve Challenge a little bit, and they wanted to get a bunch of B-roll, right? So B-roll is, you know, how do you describe it? What is B-roll?
B-roll is random footage that is used to patch up and add dimension to the primary material.
There you go, right?
B-roll.
Filler. So the B-roll was everybody was, like, in their rooms, and they're practicing. Right. Mm-hmm. So you had all these, you know, cake decorators and their assistants, and they're in their room and they're working out their movements and their timing and, you know, working on their lists of, okay, at 4:05, we're going to do this. At 4:07, I want to be painting this. At 4:15, I want to do this. Right. And on the way into Sea Island, I saw there was a skeet range, like, you know, shotgun range.
Yeah, sure.
Range. So I said to Jeff, I was like, dude, we got to go shoot guns. This will be fun. And so Jeff and I were like, hey, we're going to go. We're not going to, you know, film this thing.
We're blowing this off.
Yeah, we're gonna go shoot guns. And so they were like, oh, can we come and film that? And I was like, yeah, I mean, if you want to, but it's not food. You know, that was my mentality at the time.
Yeah,
we're not actually gonna
be shooting ducks or anything.
Right. So, you know, we went out there and they're filming us and we're just shooting guns and, you know, just hooting and hollering, having a good time. And then then we do the competition. I remember one point in the competition, so the way that they did these, there was like 8 teams of pastry chefs. We're all in a big line.
Right.
And then you had 3 cameras. Each camera had like a producer. And so it was a cameraman and producer. And they would, you know, going back and forth.
Yeah,
and
story producer.
Yeah, talking to you, getting you, asking you questions and things like that. Well, you know, and everything was great. Like, I was having fun with it. I was like, you know, goofing around with the camera guys. And there was one camera guy that every time he would walk by my station, I'd break something, and he would always catch it. Every time you catch it,
no matter what, he was there to for whenever something went wrong.
Yeah, but he was always there, and then it would happen. Like it was like it's almost like he knew,
he made it happen.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
He actually made him manufactured it.
Like just messing with the guy. Like he came over, and I was like, I had this like really delicate piece of fence in my hand, this like wrought iron fence. It was really cool.
And you know, this out of sugar or paste?
This is out of gum paste. Okay, yeah, pastillage. And so I was like holding, and I was like this, and he came, and he's like, you know, kind of zooming in, and I break it. And he just like tilts the camera up to me, and I like just look right in the camera, really mean, just kind of mugged at him. I was just like, I swear, if you bring that camera over here one more time, I'm going to crack that lens in half, right? But I was like, kidding, like, you know. And then we started laughing. He was laughing, I was laughing, everybody was laughing. It's great, right? Funny.
Yeah, but when they cut the piece.
Exactly. So, you know, then, you know, fast forward like, you know, 4 months. And in my head, I'm like, there's no way they're going to use that. Come on, it's terrible.
No.
You know, like, I think a part of it they had to bleep out. And like, and I was just, they used it for like the teaser.
Yeah.
So like, you know, and I was just like,
because you were the most exciting thing going on. Trust me.
I mean, it's a bunch of cake deck. Like, you know, like at that point, like cake deck running wasn't this, like you weren't.
Thing.
It was the thing, but it wasn't entertainment yet. It was like, oh, look at these. Like pretty arcane people doing this very specific thing, and it was sort of like this. I was there, and I was just like, blah, you know,
sure,
having fun, goofing off. And so we came in third place. It's pretty good. It's respectable. I remember the girl who won, Bronwyn Weber, cake decorator in Texas.
Just, yeah, I don't know her.
Unbelievable, man. She did this cauldron, and it had a skeleton hand coming out of it, and it was holding a skull, and it was, dude, it was so cool. It was so cool. And wow. She was right next to me the whole time, and I'm like, so we're sitting there making our cake. I mean, it was good. Like, we weren't like, oh, but I'm like looking over, and I was like, geez, like that's amazing. And so I kept telling Jeff, I'm like, dude, take pictures of what she's doing, man, because like the whole reason why we agreed to do all these things was I've never worked in a cake shop. Jeff never worked in a kitchen. He didn't like he's a architecture guy. And so, you know, we were like, you know, doing these competitions. We were just picking up tips like, oh, this is how you do this. This is how you do that. Cause we were,
using this as R&D.
Absolutely, man. Cause these guys, they were doing like their techniques were incredible. You know, I didn't know what luster dust was. I didn't know what gum paste was.
I still don't know what luster dust is.
I'll teach you. It's just edible glitter and stuff, you know? But you know, that's what we were going to do these things. And then Food Network was like, hey, you know, the episode aired and people liked it, and they were just like, hey, will you do more of those? And I was like, sure. You know, like we're not that good. I mean, I don't know why you want us. And they're like, no, you should come do more. So
it's because you were a character.
We were characters. Yeah. And so we kept doing more. And then I remember the last one I did, was, I think it was in Arizona, and we were at this giant, it was like, this huge like ballroom in a hotel, and they had it set up for this competition. It was in front of a live audience. You know, you had, it was probably 1,000 people there watching, and you know, you had, this was a big one. I think there were like 10 different teams of people doing stuff.
Is that a lot for a competition like this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's a lot of people. Like, cause it's, you know, back then, like, you know, now like you see how they do these cake shows. Like, you know, they give the cake decorators like an hour and a half to do something because it's expensive, you know, to run those things. Back then, they were giving us 8 hours. We were on that stage for 8 hours because what you had to do to make a cake, you know, and that's not enough time, you know, to do what we did, which is why I think you've sort of seen a decline in the quality of the
work. Sure, because it's got to go faster.
Yeah, you got to go fast, and everyone's hoping just for a disaster, and that's it. And so anyways, we're at this, my very last one, and the theme was sports. And so I did a sport fishing boat. Right, this cool boat, and it had a big, like, the guy on the back was holding the rod, and I had this like piece of wire coming out of the rod, and this giant fish like hooked up to it, and it was like sort of balanced in air, you know, it looked like the fish was jumping out of the water, but it was like totally balanced on this wire. It was really cool. And I had built this giant metal tower that was like the tower for the boat. So like, you know, on like a sport fishing boat, they have like those decks and those like,
sure,
levels that, yep, come out of the top. So I built that thing. It was probably almost 2 feet high, I think. And we're putting together, you know, putting the cake together, doing everything. And like, with less than 5 minutes in the competition, it literally disintegrates. I mean, everything, it just completely falls apart. And the tower was sunk into the cake, and as the tower fell, it tore the cake apart. It was an absolute mess, right? Absolute mess.
And all within the last few minutes.
Within the last few minutes. Like, you know, couldn't make this up. And I did not do it on purpose. Like, it just happened. And so I'm standing there and I'm looking at this mess and all these people and all the cameras are on me and everything. And I was like, okay, I could freak out, right? And then all these people are going to see
easily,
me freak out. But like,
easily.
What do you can't freak out. So I just started laughing. I don't know why. I just started cracking up. I thought it was the funniest thing. And so I'm laughing at this mess because there's literally, it's like if there was an hour left, I might have been able to patch some stuff and at least get something to.
But it was over.
It was
game over.
It was over. It was a did not finish, right? You know, and so I started laughing, and then you know you had to do the big thing where it was you pick up the cake and present it to the judges. And you had to move it, and so you know they and like they would tell you when you're filming you have to wait. They would do one team sure. at a time, and so you know they like did everybody, and I was like, hey, well, you know what about me? And they're like, you don't have any cake, and I was like, I'm going to move something. Just get the camera over here. So the guy comes over with the camera and he's filming me, and I pick up the fish that had fallen, and I'm like holding it like it's this sacred object. I'm like, oh, I'm making this face. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, and I like I walk it over to the table, you know, just being funny, and I lay it down on the table, and it was like everybody laughed. And then like they announced the winner and I demanded a recount, you know, same thing. Like, you know, it's funny, right? It's like
that's excellent.
Yeah. And then so
they were like, what the
yeah, no, they were like, it was you know, everybody was like, you know, they were like, at least he's being cool, you know what I mean? And
so I demand a recount.
So my mom was in the audience. And so I was like, I knew she was out there and I could see her, and she was crying, right? She was pretty upset. And so I was just like, oh man. So, you know, everything's over, which I thought. And then I went out into the audience and, you know, to like give my mom a hug, you know, I'm hugging her and she's crying. And so I was
this
like,
is your artist mom.
Yeah. This is my, oh yeah.
Who was okay. Kinda with graffiti yes, on the side.
Absolutely.
On the side right, of a right, train.
Yeah.
But is crying at your cake disaster.
Exactly. You know, and so I'm like, I'm hugging her and I'm like, mom, it's okay. I was like, just like make her feel better. I was like, you know, they're probably going to give me my own show after this. And
you were joking.
Yeah. I was joking. The camera was right behind me when I said that. And so I think I said that and they were like, you know, cause they were like, you know, they were, obviously it was funny, you know, and I was just like, and I, you know, I made good enough cakes that we could put them on television. They weren't that embarrassing. But I think the thing that sold it was for that episode, they came to the bakery and they did some B-roll and they knew me. They knew Jeff, my sous chef, you know, they knew that we were like young dudes. We both played music. We're in bands. We have tattoos, you know, we're just kind of a couple of weirdos. Then they came to the bakery in Baltimore and they realized I had about 11 people working for me and every single one of them came from art school. None of them came from culinary school and they were all weirdos. Everybody, we all had blue hair.
It was a house full of weirdos.
It was a house full of weirdos. And so they were like, wow, I'm just characters. And so Ace Boom. Cakes happened. Yeah. Insane, right?
Any regrets?
I mean, I'm sure if I really thought about it, but I think the positive so outweighs the negative. You know, I think there's a few things I would have done differently. Like, because, you know, a lot of people, I think the perception is, oh, wow, you get a TV show based on your business. Man, business is going to be just booming. It's like, well, if I was selling widgets, you know, or if I was selling 99-cent cheeseburgers, maybe. But, like, when you're selling works of art, you can only make so many. You know, it's not like I have a machine that spits out works of art. I have incredibly talented people that work for me. And so, you know, we couldn't fulfill every order that we got.
No, it's right? 500 people want cakes. You still can only make 10 cakes.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So so what happened was our prices started to go up. And when prices started to go up, now, even now, to this day, the impression is, oh, yeah, you can't get a cake from Duff. His cakes are $10,000. Believe me, if I was getting 10 grand a cake, I would not be working anymore. You know, like it's, you know, I wish I could get 10 grand a cake, but, you know, my cakes are the same price as everybody else's. But the perception was, oh, they're super expensive. You know?
Does anybody ever just come in or call up and just order a plain old cake? Not like, I don't need a cake that plays golf. Right. I just want a cake.
Right.
Does anybody actually just order a cake?
Yeah. Yeah. We actually, I mean, you know, most of our cakes are relatively tame. You know, they're like, you know, wedding cakes, beautiful wedding cakes. We do birthday cakes. I mean, you name it. We make cupcakes now, which is, you know, to my chagrin, but we do.
Now, why do you say it's to your chagrin?
It's cupcakes, you know.
Yeah, the same way.
Too much frosting, right? The frosting, it's, you know, and people like, they like their frosting really sweet. I use real Swiss buttercream. You know, that's what we make in the bakery, and that's what I put on my cupcakes. And you would be amazed, but like most of the people that eat cupcakes that have my frosting, they're like, "This frosting is weird." I'm like, "No, it's not. Like all the other frosting you're eating is weird. I know it's, you know, like
I mean, because everybody else is using lard and
just,
sugar.
Yeah, just lard. Yeah, Crisco sugar. You know, just like American, you know, whipped
American buttercream.
American buttercream. Yeah.
American buttercream.
Yeah, and you know, people like, you know, I like, you know, this doesn't taste like sprinkles, and sprinkles is great. You know, Candace does an awesome job, but our frosting is very different. And people are like, this is weird. It's not sweet enough. And I'm like, okay. Cupcakes,
get out.
And just a, you know, with a cake, you have a canvas, you have so much, there's surface area to work with, you know, right. make something really cool. Cupcakes, you know, what can you do? Put a little ladybug on it, a little butterfly,
you
know.
Well, apparently you could put a whip scorpion on it, right. From what you were saying earlier. Yeah,
that's true.
When it would be really easy for me, hey, what's the weirdest cake somebody's actually made? I actually don't care. What I actually care about is, do you still occasionally just want a piece of cake?
Oh yeah, I love cake.
And when you want a piece of cake, what do you want? What is if somebody's going to bring Duff Goldman a birthday cake? Mm. What's it going to be?
So like box mix yellow cake, uh-huh. With
Duncan Hines or Betty Crocker.
Duncan Hines for Duncan yellow Hines, cake. Yeah. Cake. Duncan Hines with fudge frosting, like the yellow cake with the chocolate frosting.
That's,
yeah. And if there's little tiny rainbow nonpareils on there, the real small ones,
yeah
little sprinkles. Well.
Yeah. I like the way they crunch in the molars. Yeah. So they get the back of the teeth and they, uh-huh. Give this little something to happen.
Yeah, it's also like it's like a Tobiko though. It's, mm-hmm. It's like it's a gift that keeps on giving. You know what I mean? Like, you know, after you get sushi, like,
you should actually put Tobiko on one just for the fun of it. Just flying fish row on your cake. Somebody would eat that.
I'm sure they would.
If people
I'm
eat
sure
that, and say, "Oh my God, he's a genius! Oh,
this guy is just—he's magnificent."
Do you think that sometimes it just goes too far? The flavors and the wackiness and the people are just forgetting that just good old cake is good.
I think that I just with food in general, mm-hmm. I think that we did definitely go through a weird phase where everything was laser cut and herb smoked and just, you know, like where people were just, things were just really, really strange.
It's like the molecular gastronomy of cake.
Yeah. If you think about the sort of thought process behind molecular gastronomy, I think I was probably the biggest, you know, like I was probably the worst one. I mean, I'm putting motors and lights and I'm hanging them upside down. I mean, I was doing some weird stuff with cakes. You know, I'd make them, like we made one that was remote control and it ran around a stage. It was a car. You know, we've made like I made a working huge, I mean it was like 7 feet long, made a working monster truck.
You know, I've seen pictures of it.
Spat mud. It was great.
But did it still taste good?
It was delicious and we devoured it.
Ate the truck.
But you know, as far as like flavors, I don't think people are getting too weird, because I mean cake, you know, it doesn't lend itself well, I think, to getting too crazy. Yeah.
On top of that, people have this emotional connection to it, because we do have this birthday cake thing, you know, and we all have pictures of us when we were little kids shoving the, you know, grabbing it with both hands and shoving it into our faces, which, by the way, I still advocate.
Absolutely. Me too, man.
I love to eat cake with my hands. I don't know why. I have a thing about just wanting to. This is what I like about layer cake, is I'll disassemble it by hand. I'll take the layers apart and eat them individually. And I'm not well that way, and it wouldn't be something I would do in public, but you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
I need to put down a tarp when I eat cake.
I want to see that.
Well, it totally happens. So you're not bored of cake yet?
No, I love cake. You know, and I love sugar. I'm a pastry chef. I love sugar, man. I love candy. I love gummies. Have you ever had a Kasugai gummy?
Yes.
Are they the best? Their flavors are amazing.
The textures are also really good.
The textures are juicy. I mean, they're really, like, you know, there's some way they trick your brain into thinking it's wet. You know, it's juicy.
But it's not.
But it's not. It's a gummy.
So could you say goodbye to TV, goodbye to everything public, and like be Willy Wonka and disappear into a factory with your Oompa Loompas and just make candy and cake and stuff?
I would love to.
Would that be all right?
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah, in a heartbeat. And it's not because I love doing television. I mean, being able to reach people and just like show them stuff and, you know, having, you know, 8-year-olds and 10-year-olds come up to me and be like, I want to be a chef when I grow up. And I'm like, well, you're going to rethink that, but awesome. You know, that's great. Like, you know, that, like, that's amazing. And, you know, being able to share what we do with this many people is a blessing. It's just, I mean, it's just an amazing thing. But could I disappear into a factory for 10 years and just make crazy? Yes, absolutely. I love it.
is there something that has beaten you? Is there something that you really have wanted to make or invent or concoct with sugar, with pastry, with cake that still you haven't cracked yet?
Mm.
Is there an everlasting gobstopper, in, you know, that hasn't right. been worked out yet?
Right.
The lickable wallpaper or the chewing gum that gives you all the flavors of a meal. I mean, is there something like that? Are you like that? Because you've spent so much time and energy and creativity concocting. I mean, to use your words, you made a giant, you know, monster truck that actually operated.
Yeah.
You know, you've put so much time and attention and your kind of soul into the structure and sculpture of things. Has something gotten away from you? Is there something you're like, I can't do that, or I still have to work this out?
Absolutely. I know exactly what it is.
I'd love to hear.
It's any type of bladder. So some sort of like, I need to figure out how to make some sort of edible but moisture-proof pouch to be able to put inside of a cake. So when you cut a cake, it can like ooze or it can bleed or like it can – like for example, like one of the cakes I want to do is – you saw Empire Strikes Back. Okay, obviously. Many times. Okay. So you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. You'll know what I'm talking about. So the scene, okay, the Tauntaun dies, you know, falls over, and Luke is about to die. Han Solo, which is weird because a non-Jedi picking up a lightsaber is very strange.
It's a Swiss Army knife.
Right? You know, so he picks up the lightsaber, and he cuts open the belly of the Tauntaun, and then all the guts
spill out.
You know,
they thought they smelled bad on the outside.
Right. Okay, you've seen it. So all the guts come out. So I can't figure out a way to make that kind of texture and have that moisture that's inside of a cake, because the moisture, it just erodes anything. I've used like fruit roll-ups, made like fruit leather and stuff, and the moisture just erodes right through it. So I can't find any sort of black. Now, I can use like a sausage casing, but I don't want to put that in a cake. That's kind of gross. So, you know.
Yeah, collagen inside the cake.
Mm-mm.
What about something that's just fat-based, since it's hydrophobic, and something that's literally, like, there must be a way of blowing a bubble, a workable bubble of a solid fat, like a coconut, some kind of coconut oil, but not a coconut oil that we have, that will set up, that you could work with it really cold, fill it, and know that it's going to. The problem is you've got to bake it into the cake.
Well, you don't have to bake it in. You can carve the cake out.
Well, then it seems like you got to be able to come up with something that's solid at room temperature. Mm-hmm. You can literally like blow a balloon or make a mold out of it that's not involving gelatin.
Yeah. So I was going to say, like, I wonder if like some sort of slurry. I don't know, but like
I don't know.
Yeah, it's
But it's got to be a fat, because that's the only thing that'll hold in
that liquid. Because it has to hold the liquid, because the liquid, anything else is going to eat right through it. You know, it's like just like the fruit leather. You know, it just dissolves.
That's what happened, right?
Yeah,
because that's basically just gelatin
dissolves,
and agar and
gone, soaks into the cake, and you just get this cavity, and then the cake falls in on itself.
Well, I'm glad to know that there's something that you still have to work on.
I can't figure it out.
And because my birthday's in July, and guess what? I'm ordering a Tauntaun cake. I'm ordering a fully functioning Tauntaun cake. I'm going online. I am placing the order now. Duff, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally.